If you want to assume your positions, I'm going to kick off the third part of the evening tonight. This is the Avail Open Mic. Alright, that's it. Okay, so can we have some silence, please, for our first performer on the open mic, who is Colin Scully. Right, have a round of applause, please. Thank you.
It's not quite Christmas yet, but this is a Christmas poem, and I wrote it last year, and about it's a true story about someone that I didn't know the person involved, but I knew the relations with him, so I didn't read it last year, but I'll read it now. It's called Christmas Morning. She woke, she rose, put her clothes on, fed a dog, rearranged the tabletop, stuffed the bird, talked with a bird on the phone, left the house alone, drove as far as Mulgrave Road, parked, changed her shoes, fluffed her stole, rolled the window up, walked the mass, passing kiosks in the dark. She reached the steps, 1, 2, 3 up she went. It wasn't ice that caught her, rain on the worn limestone flags. She slipped and fell backwards, her whole body hammering her head against the curved edge of the bottom step. She groaned, arms writhing. The prior came running, his long white cassock mopping up blood, her still body awaiting the sound of sirens blaring over the quays towards her. They dispersed, old men in hats, a gypsy begging at the church door, an elderly lady who half knew her, a semi-sober Russian sleeping rough, stray dog. Mass commenced late at 8:07. She died at 8:15. The trifle ready, the sprouts washed and cleaned.
And next we have Alan.
So this is Innocence. One I loved, the triangular hill that hung under the big forth. They said that I was bounded by the whitethorn hedges of the little farm and did not know the world. Ah, but I knew that love's doorway to life is the same doorway everywhere. Ashamed of what I loved, I flung her from me and called her a ditch, though she was smiling at me with violets. But now I am back in her briary arms, the dew of an Indian summer on bleached potato stalks. What age am I? I do not know what age I am. I have no mortal age. I know nothing of women, nothing of cities. I cannot die unless I walk outside of these white thorn hedges. Thank you.
Next up, we have Rosie.
This is just a very short sentence, actually. I don't think it's a poem, but I've been coming up with these things, and they're like things to write on pavements. It goes like this. To be the jack of many trades and the master of myself. To be the jack of many trades and the master of myself. That's it. Thanks.
And now we have Mary O'Connor.
Hi. This is written during the summer when I was at a very beautiful place for a writer's retreat. So it's called Now I Know. And it has an anagram at the beginning. By Alphonse de Lamartine. It's in French, but what it means is that one person is missing and the whole world is a desert. Un seul être vous manque et tout est dépeuplé. I thought I'd be transformed in this hidden place of peace, that the carapace I hide behind would gently fall away, leaving a creature smitten by the stillness of the lake. The softness that I seek is out of reach. I hear birds welcoming the day, walk down winding paths, watch clouds like fraying strands of wool push through the quivering air, and stay dispassionate and cold. Bewildered by my pitiful response, I wonder what I lack. Remember then that time in France we walked through stubble fields, uninteresting and flat, yet found enchantment there in every step. Thrown into new surroundings, I learn again the lesson of your loss. By your side, the dullest landscape flared alive. Without you, beauty fills me with unease. Eyes may look, but it's the heart that sees.
Okay, and next up, I'm not sure if I'm going to read this right. I think it says Stan. It might say Stan. It might say Stan. Stan, cool.
It's like being back in school when I can't freeze your racing, Stan. Okay, so I've kind of revisited these poems that I've been writing from song titles and doing a bit of editing on them. So thanks to Paul Casey for a few hints the other day. So I'd love to do Metallica one tonight. I suppose, for those who haven't heard it before, it's constructed entirely using Metallica song titles. Here we go. Let's see this. In the small hours, an unnamed feeling slithers under the ice, and a Judas kiss begins bleeding me toward the end of the line. Die, die, my darling, say the frayed ends of sanity. Cure the bad seed, purify the weight, fuel the day that never ends until it sleeps and is stone dead forever. What a blackened harvester of sorrow am I, evil, paranoid, frantic, unforgiven, one helpless human holding the shortest straw. So what? Escape. Stop wasting my hate. Stop creeping death into my world, says Prince Charming, my fixer. But he's too late, too late. I fade to black, disappear through the never dirty window, where nothing else matters except the crying of the dead.
Wow.
Next up, we will have Charles Clark.
There was an event in the college over the weekend to do with Buddhism, and I heard a great deal about it, but I didn't actually go. This afternoon, I was thinking about using a poem, not my own, but another one, and I thought, but some of these lines came to me, and I thought, well, I'm not sure I can make this any further, but Buddha, over that November weekend, the Buddha, a prince become reliquary, reigned over the LMX UCC. And the other offer is a poem by R.S. Thomas that I used to be very keen on a long time ago. And it's called Via Negativa, which I think means something like the way of negation. It's a mystical term. And it's about God, basically. Why, no, I never thought other than that God is the great absence in our lives, the empty silence within, the place where we go seeking, not in hope to arrive or find. He keeps the interstices in our knowledge, the darkness between stars. His are the echoes we follow, the footprints he has just left. We put our hands in his side, hoping to find it warm. We look at people and places as though he had looked at them too, amidst the reflection.
Okay, and next up we will have Joe Sweeney.
Oh, what is this? It's an essay. Oh, my God. It's short. It's called Storyword, and it's really about the magic of reading, of books, and the imagination, and my memories of some of the books that I read over the years. Storyworld. From our earliest moments, stories fascinate us. As infants, we gaze up at adult faces, read their eyes, smiles, and frowns. We hear the music of language, the strangeness of words, and sense that something is going on, a story, and we are part of it. Through stories, we enter the secret garden of others' imaginations. Their dreams enchant us, breathe our own to life. Little Bo Peep, Lost Sheep, Men Who Go to Mow a Meadow, Red Riding Hood, bobbing along as wolfish eyes gleam from the shadows. Words free us from ourselves, connect us with others, with the real world. Yet, when hammered into stories, they accrue a wondrous underside that can sweep us over the fantastic edge. When we learn to read, we dive into a great river of marvels. Through shoals of words, we swim through dark and magical waters. As a boy, I was taken by Frank O'Connor into a shadowy confessional. I knelt on an armrest, clung desperately to a grid, and tried to talk to a priest upside down. Years later, James Joyce would draw me inside Leopold Bloom, that Rabelaisian shadow of Homer's Ulysses, and sweep me down the stream of Molly Bloom's consciousness. None of them were real, of course. Bloom and Molly, Ulysses and the boy in the confessional, were creations, dreams, yet they have a life, a reality, a truth somewhere inside us. I remember walking to the library once upon a time, but riding back with Simon Bolivar. I slayed with Roald Amundsen across the frozen wastes of Antarctica, traveled with Marco Polo down the Silk Road, on the Oriental spice trails with Ferdinand Magellan and Vasco da Gama. I sailed the world. I hid in a barrel of apples on the Hispaniola and eavesdropped on Long John Silver and his pirate crew. I was a stowaway on the ship of dreams. I stroked lamps, freed genies, smelt the perfumes of Arabia on the breath of Scheherazade, on a stream of sesame seeds. I flew to Mecca and Baghdad. I crossed the Russian steppes with hordes of Mongols, danced with Cossacks, reined my horse by the Great Wall of China, and strode into the palace of the great Genghis Khan. Stories bewitched me. I saw things that never were. Elves and fairies, minotaurs and dragons, monsters and gods. I rode with Oisin to Tir na n'Eol. With the children of Lear, I was changed to a swan, served a sentence of centuries, traveled from sea to lonely sea, until I heard the bell that freed the land. I sat by the fire at the feet of the Fian, I heard their tales, I saw the stag that leaped across the pass of Caymanay. I was the boy who hurled the ball that killed the hound. I died with Cuchulainn. I died at Thermopylae. I ran from Marathon to Athens, breathless with news. I sought the Golden Fleece. I drove chariots, flew on Pegasus. Mere realities crumbled. I laughed and wept at marvelous tragedies, at a boy with broken wings falling from the sky. I wandered with Odysseus, fought with Achilles, labored with Hercules. I kept my finger in the dike to save the town. I sat on branches with Huckleberry Finn, smoked his pipe, and rafted down the moonlit ripples of the Mississippi. I was a blue-eyed dreamer. On wintry nights, to the sound of voices murmuring from the turf-fired glow, I lived again between the covers. I led 1,000 lives, died 1,000 deaths. The gods sang to me. Otherworldly voices whispered in my ears. You are not real, they said. You are not of earth, but of dreams. You are the heavens. You are stardust. And even if my youth was doomed, like Icarus, to come to earth, imagination soared on. Magic story-woven carpets still break my fall. I find, like Ali Baba, the words to make the mountain of reality open up. Inside that old cavern lies endless treasure, a story world, where I am anyone and everyone, where heroes are killed, but their tales never die, where winged boys hurtle tragically out of the sun, yet somehow live forever.
And now we have, as I finish the story of the place, we have, I think this is Juza? Juka? I'm not sure. Cool.
Juza. Hey, 6 days ago I met my friend and he said he's going to leave in next week. I wrote it for him 6 days ago. Yeah. Don't need to say goodbye. No need to be cloudy, foggy in your heart. Don't need to think and worry when you're leaving. not here. I always here. You always here in my heart. Oh, don't need to wave your hand when you leave. Just leave your smile for me. See you when you see me. Me always here. Your voice in me always here. Your voice in my heart, in my mind. Keep smile, my friend. My friend, hope you are safe when you leave, my friend. I don't care, my friend, where are you far or near by. Just have the connect of your heart, always remember of you.
Next we have Billy Ramsell.
I want to dedicate this poem to a busker who died recently in Cork. Some of you may know him, Alex. He's actually Russian. I never knew he was Russian, but he played the guitar.
Fantastic.
Yeah. He played a lot of Jimi Hendrix, Eric Clapton, Roy Gallagher, that kind of stuff. You would have seen them behind Waterstones or over by the
Crawford,
yeah. He passed away just about a week ago. I don't know. Yeah, I'm just going to dedicate this poem to him tonight. It's called Sound. To render the ocean, one needs a whole year, with zoom and freezing fingers on a quarter mile of coast. Sound is the one true vocabulary of nature, and not the peacock palette painters swear he uses for his best stuff, for his daily disposable frescoes. To render the ocean, one needs a whole year on the quayside, tracking the tide's increasing stature, its drones and climaxes, the diminuendo when it shows that sound is the one true vocabulary of nature. Nature plays bass clarinet in a pop-up Berlin theater. In a polo neck, he solos the ocean. He tongues, he blows to render the ocean. One needs a whole year or centuries to capture even its least most feature, like the boat cove's backwashed lapping contraflows. Sound is the one true vocabulary of nature, who's lost in his MacBook, applying filter after filter to every rock pool's jazz, to every tiny stadium, roofless stadium's day-long system of echoes. To render the ocean, one needs a whole year. Sound is the one true vocabulary of nature. Alexei, thank you. Crazy little puppet.
Next we'll have Jamie Urquhart.
Hello. This is called Indian Rice 8. It's named after there's a high-yield strain of rice that was bred by Norman Borlaug, and he got the Nobel Peace Prize for it in 1970. So, Indian Rice 8. Norman grafted under microscopes, breeding shots in the dark, guesstimates, sometimes dead ends. It was all rice sex and paddies in those days, and the crack whip of the famined millions. But in that DNA, that splicing, was it the hydrogen bonds, the deoxyribose? It could have been the phosphates. No, it was simply the coming together, the interlocking bond. And in that bond, they say, he birthed a billion people. Yes.
Okay, and next up we have Tygo Milan.
Thank you.
My name's Tej, I'm an ad. This is a piece for a guy, the father of a friend of mine, and to say that he impressed me is kind of an understatement. It's called A Light Dusting Wizard. He moved the way a wizard moves, in circles around the circling sun. No distance is too great for them who know how this is done. What he knew about what's real, he wanted you to know. He wanted you to really feel it, so you'd never unknow again. A great teacher could do this without you realizing. So he was such a teacher, one who taught you amazing stuff, like how to move a swarm of bees. Stuff like what bird makes what shape, and it flew. What colour it was, young or grown, in what season it should make its particular sound, and for what reason. Men that see and know these things are as rare as the creatures they observe. They certainly are wizards. With the way of wizards, the will of wizards, they woo like a wizard. The art of wizardry walks one apart from other men, mostly not knowing what they are, just knowing that they're out of step and often lonely. So alone on that orb that circles around that circling sun, also aware of the nature of their connection to every leaf and twig, rock and water droplet, bird, bear, bee, bug and banana, but sometimes on a plane so subliminal and ethereal as to feel unreal. So Gordon, in my reckoning, was a wizard. I am friendly with his son. The legacy of his wizardry rubbed off on most of his descendants. They may all have the opportunity to walk that lonely road. The ones who embrace it may also show up wizard later on in years. It doesn't seem to visit upon the young. Others will run from it in terror, and maybe run so fast as to find themselves there anyway. The journey is the important piece, some think. The man who was Gordon is now a bag of ashes in a box on a shelf. The spirit who lived amongst his bones and grisly carcass still lives in the minds of those who loved him. And all the little ways he helped to shape who they are ensures that he will live for unfinite days. Maybe the spirit lives in other ways that are mysterious to most. Whether 'tis wise or otherwise to be so certain of what we become after we draw our last lungful. As we are called home by a friendly gesture of some satisfied saviour, or scalded and scoured at length in a prison made from bad deeds, to conjecture ad nauseum, ad infinitum. To spend time with his friends and his family, he certainly lives still. In me he lives, in reading this or listening you he lives. That's the wizard's way. He looked like one, if you could see it. It was a lovely sight, a well-trimmed white beard, hawk eyes, with a splash of humour in every beat of his loving heart. A sea of love waiting to be sailed if you dared. What music moved him to tears? What words can do him justice? When all is said and done, let no more be said or done. Sit in the stillness then, and know him. Marvel at the momentum in that moment when it all becomes clear. We are atoms and electrons. We are gods. We are also nothings. We are also everythings. Thanks.
Okay, all right, next up we have Shane Vaughan.
So as some of you know, I run an event called Stanza, very dear friends of mine. Caleb Brennan, some of you might know, he's the guy who's that hilarious laugh. I'm going to read one of his poems. Stanza is a poetry and prose night that we do in Limerick. It's mostly for young writers, like 18 to 20 odd. It's actually quite a bit more than just a poetry and prose event. It's a place for young people to go and not just feel like they're able, but they're allowed to express himself through words, and it's really annoying because I wish I had that when I was 18. And here I am running the damn thing. I don't know what I'm doing. But yeah, so we make these little chapbooks, and they're only €2. You'd be surprised what we can do with €2 for each chapbook. I mean, it allows me to be able to go up to Limerick, it allows us to run this event for them, and it's really quite a powerful thing that they've got there, and I really love doing it. So I've got a handful left, and if anyone wants one, can have one. But anyway, now I'm going to read a poem for you guys. So Caleb Brennan, and this is dedicated to his father who passed when he was quite young. It's called The Death of a Man. He had cold hands, as cold as the hands I shook that day, dapper in his suit. His kept hair made him look like the man he was in his days. I was made to kiss him in a way to show love. I do not recall kissing him this way at all. When I did it before, I was less willing, but this was different. This was the last time. I can't help remember when we jumped the man in the hallway of his house. He was always a strong man, even with his wooden cane. He kept his stride and his pride when he lost his hair. At least this is what he showed. He showed a lot of things. His ignoring calls at night to wake up from his sleep. And today he ignores us in his suit and his kept hair. This man will sleep, just like we all will soon. So I gaze, somewhat ignorant, and wonder, how long would it take to love him? Longer than the process it took to take him, or a lifetime. Anyway, we played with the images of memory in the speeches, or the fact that his mustache was neater than the suit itself. I never saw the death of this man, but I was told it was peaceful. So I watched as those curtains closed, and I repeated the Hail Mary to myself, and with the grace of the man he was, he left us. Thank you.
Okay, and now we have John.
I also tried to visit the Buddhist thing, but they closed early for some reason. It's not my own post. Anyone here have an iPhone? Show of hands. I want you to take it out and think of the person that made it. This is a story about Zhu Liji, who comes from Shenzhen, and works in a company called Foxconn, which I used to work in a company called Foxconn, which makes all of the Apple iPhones, basically, and they've had quite a lot of suicides, so much so that they've had a 24-hour hotline and nets put up outside dormitories, and it's literally like it used to be in mining towns where they own the shops, own the dormitories, own the company, own you, basically. And all these young rural Chinese move into Shenzhen, just across the water from Hong Kong, with hopes and dreams of building a better life, and eventually become like they start the metropolis, the faceless, and they lose their face and their voice. This young man, 24-year-old, actually left behind some poems, so I'm going to read you three short poems that I found today. So, on his rented room, every time I open the window or the wicker gate, I seem like a dead man slowly pushing open the lid of a coffin. Then, on entering the city, we ran along the railway, arriving in some place called the city, where we trade in our youth and our muscle. Finally, we have nothing to trade, only a cough and a skeleton nobody cares about. Sleepless. Midnight, everyone is sleeping soundly. We keep our pair of young wounds open. These black eyes, can you really lead us to the light? Night shift. Finally, December 2013, the bitterness is becoming clear now because the dreams have become kind of morphed into this soulless life of turning up and doing massively long shifts. I swallowed a moon made of iron. They refer to it as a nail. I swallowed this industrial sewage, these unemployment documents. You'd stoop that machines die before their time. I swallowed the hustle and the destitution. Swallowed pedestrian bridges, life covered in rust. I can't swallow any more. All that I've swallowed is now gushing out of my throat, unfurling on the land of my ancestors into a disgraceful poem. He tried to escape and applied for jobs in libraries, even the internal library in Foxconn. Then he moved away to be with his girlfriend, but the relationship didn't work out, so he ended up back at Foxconn in Shenzhen. And this is possibly the last, it's definitely the last poem, possibly even on the day he killed himself. So he ended up jumping out the window of the dormitory. So, I want to touch the sky, feel that blueness so light, but I can't do any of this. So I'm leaving this world. Everyone who's heard of me shouldn't be surprised at my leaving. Even less should you sigh or grieve. I was fine when I came, and fine when I left.
Okay, next up we have Lucy Lyons.
Hi, this is an experiment. Obviously it's not working, okay. I have to read this because sometimes there are too many words and they're all competing for space in my head. I can't write them all, but I have to choose instead. And it's all happening here on this page, this one chance before they disappear in the darkness of forgetting. And I'm sad because it sounded so shockingly brilliant last night in the mists of almost sleep. But memory steals words, you know, and doesn't give them back in the same beautiful order. And it's appalling. And you have to write them while you see them, because sometimes it's so hard and you need to peer between the cracks to find them in the middle of the night when they're alive. They hide in the daylight when your head is full of unimportant things and the phone's ringing and your dinner cools and gels while you're away in the shadows chasing words with cobweb nets and the mesh is wrong and they all fall through and you have to start again and dinner is ruined and the bloody phone again and reality is so pushy. And you'd much prefer the quiet properness of dreams and captured words and building stories in your head when you can catch them. And you wonder how they'll all be rearranged and jumbled when you get back to return. And if you'll ever find the right ones again or a flake of something else instead that fits badly. And God, there's not enough time to find them and use them all correctly as we should. Because that's the whole point and why we're here. And it's 4 a.m. and another cup of tea will do. But don't wake the whole house, or they'll all be up for munchies, and you can't have them in the world of words, when they don't believe in the wonderful madness, or what goes on in your head, or the fabulous and mythical happiness of knowing the comfort of the storm. Woo!
Okay, and now on mic we have Kieran McCartan.
My hands are sore listening to you. I'd like to give a shout out to Michael O'Callaghan, actually, who's not here tonight because he's practicing for our game on Saturday. Hey. Hey. Respect. This is a poem called The Bringing Down of the Banner. For you who brought the banner down, and all I wanted to do was stand up, stand under it for you. Who saw no conflict when decisions were to be made, thought me not worth the thrust of a spade to dig up a little earth and save our riches in the dirt. You never troubled the scales when contradiction weighed heavy on your heart, but still leaned on me for balance. I wish that I was older, more beautiful, and could see the shining compliment you had given me.
Then we have Tara. Okay,
going to just offer two short ones, if that's okay. This is called Redder Than Blood. Between nostalgia for what never was and longing for what never will be lies an unrequited beauty, redder than blood, real as touch, closer than consummated love, further than the gaze of starlight. And this is called Pink. Shaved, trimmed, conditioned, wrapped, mannered, cultured, fashioned, pink, with wobbly bits.
And then we have Cedric.
That one is called Business as Unusual. Neckties, cut rope from a long branch of a dead tree. For men left hanging who traded their dreams for comfort because the fruit of labor isn't free. They move quickly towards the urgences of greed, unaware that their effort creates their hunger, hoping to satisfy one who stayed himself their leader. A slave in need is a good slave indeed. In the crowd, flowing like water, dances a nutshell. Goes with no hurry with the flow, because he only has stomach to fill, no demons to quell. They prefer not to recognize him, tighten their ropes, and advance toward the tower, taller than any tree. They think only about how they will climb it, as if hastening their own demise were their only hope. He loosens his even more so, beyond fixing. There is no more people today that he will be pleasing, because he has climbed it high enough. Cutting the tree down is the reason he has called for the meeting.
Okay, so now we have Deirdre.
Thanks. This is called Winter, and it says, the trees have bled red tears instead of leaves this year. Congealed in heaps, they slumped together, heavy laden down. Stems were getting weaker week by week, held only by your fragile frown. Now branches silhouette against the land, clear as the veins that spread across your hand. And I rake away the memories you can no longer find, should we do anything to bring you peace of mind.
Thank you, Deirdre.
Okay, I'm really going to have to apologise this one, because I can't read it at all. I think it says something like, meep. 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 Something Creedon?
Oh, Jesus!
No, I'm sorry.
No, look, by default, I have to read something red raw, and Joe is in the room, so I'm kidding. But I have to read something, I'm just a part two of last week. And it is going on the theme of people consenting to model and the fact that I wouldn't dream of it for a million years. And I promised it to the guy Stephen, who's got a job on the Vikings, is set as an extra. And in the meantime, he puts down his time doing a bit of work for Cork Life Drawing. So, with a name like Stephen, I couldn't resist a little bit of reflection on him. So, extra model behaviour. He would be a Viking and grows a beard of curls, must tune up the martial arts to fight his foe, savage foe, for this fierce false world. Must tone up his biceps and the shoulder girdle, should any damsel extra have need of lofting from his transport. But for now he is but Stephen and must rest with us a while, and they sway them in burgundy silk and light him for Caravaggio. He takes no heed of slings and arrows from the anchor of his pillar, untainted by tribal fears. No theft of his identity here, nor intrusive insult taken. Visual acuity does not prick me. It sets my spirit free, says he. For the glory of the body, he retreats within his ivory temple and thinks, I can pay for pints and jeans, and shooting starts in December, the month that calls his name. He will pillage and box clever on his day, strengthened by his art of pose and posture, while we watch winter skies on screen for this season's comet and sing our songs of Stephen. That's it.
I do apologise again for
being
that I was me. So now we have our very last act of the night. We have Rab and Mikhail, and they're going to do something to take so.
Good evening.
Actually, sorry, I'm going to have to pause you for a second. I'm sorry guys, I've completely overloaded someone with the diet. Yeah, that's my bad. We have Matthew Moylan, I'll go in second.
Thanks. The winter of my soul. Last night, as darkness breathed the Melbourne sky, I took a stroll and came to rest beneath the citrus tree. A curious lemon fell from the tree's paternal grasp, and I, taking it as a sign, bit into its toxic flesh. The bitterness, oh, the bitterness of that deceitful, hazardous fruit. Oh, how it mirrored the acidity of my soul. I bore no oranges. As dark clouds enveloped my skyline, hydrochloric acid rose from the pit of my stomach and reposed within the chambers of my tainted heart. I felt as though I was entering the winter of my life, and that this internal malaise was the final snowflake to land upon my icy path. While I sat there wallowing, a crystalline butterfly flew past. Its beauty and its clear eye compelled me to see the world in a different vein. I must fight for those sweet oranges. I must fight for the brightness. I must fight for the love, the passion, the fraternity. And in fighting, I must never forget the painful bitterness of wallowing. This is the spring of my life. This is the time to seize the world and all that's in it.
And now we have Rob Miguel. Right, sorry about that, man.
Don't cry.
I wait on him. He's the band.
Good
job, man. Look, no hands.
You were well trained, Rob.
Be always drunk. That's all there is to it. It's the only way. So as not to feel the horrible burden of time that breaks your back and bends you to the earth, you have to be continually drunk. But from what? Wine, poetry, or virtue, as you wish, but be drunk. And if sometimes on the steps of a palace, or the green grass of a ditch, in the mournful solitude of your room, you wake again, drunkenness already diminishing or gone, ask the wind. the wave, the star, the bird, the clock, everything that is flying, everything that is groaning, everything that is rolling, everything that is singing, everything that is speaking. Ask what time it is, and wind, wave, star, bird, clock will answer you. It's time to be drunk. So as not to be the martyr slaves of time, be drunk, be continually drunk on wine, on poetry, or on virtue, as you wish.